The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
An international flavour this week with two interesting people to meet. Later on, Clive Dickens, now departed for pastures Antipodean. But first, we're off to San Diego to talk to the legendary radio consultant, Mark Ramsey. Mark, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'd rather hear Clive Dickens. Let's go right to him.
Well, forgive us if we just stick with you for a tick. I wanted to pick up on a couple of things. I think a lot of people in the UK read your blog, Mark Ramsey Media. You work with a lot of commercial radio stations in the US, and you do a lot of interviews and podcasts yourself, and we'll maybe come on to talk about that in a minute. But just one thing I wanted to pick up first is the story about FM radios possibly coming out of motor cars or automobiles in the United States. What's the story with that at the moment?
I think not since the days of Barnum sideshows has there been a story so widely publicized and so completely wrong as that one. And indeed, it turned out to be completely wrong on its face. The backstory is that the original story was published in a radio trade here in the U.S., and it was quickly disavowed by the automakers. And then the publisher of the story went back to listen to their own original conversation and discovered that their recollection was completely askew. So before you know it, they had to essentially issue a retraction. And in the meantime, I did a little bit of homework and did something that presumably the folks in Detroit who make cars do all the time, which is talk to consumers. And when I did that, I found, frankly, not surprisingly, that there's an expectation that cars come equipped with FM, AM radios. And it regardless of the new wonderful mechanisms available to us, the new wonderful media available to us, the new wonderful gadgets available to us, people want that stuff in addition to the stuff they're accustomed to. They don't want it in place of those things.
I was at the Radio Days Europe conference last week, and there was a lot of optimism, I thought, amongst delegates. There was a real sense that we've perhaps seen off the descriptions of the internet as being something that's going to kill us, you know, that live radio, that whether it's digital or it's FM or whatever it is, has a future. Are you feeling that same sense of optimism in the States?
Well, I think everything is a function of when we're talking commercial radio. And I'll direct my comments towards that. Everything is a function of advertising dollars. There is a huge pool of advertising dollars devoted to commercial radio in the U.S. That huge pool of advertising dollars devoted to traditional radio in traditional ways is not growing. I mean, that's the bottom line. So if success and enthusiasm are defined by growth, i.e. more advertisers paying more money for more spots on more radio stations, then there's no reason for enthusiasm. If enthusiasm is a function of the fact that, wow, we have these tremendous relationships with huge, vast numbers of consumers and huge, vast numbers of clients, what can we do to leverage those relationships across all platforms? What can we do to nourish and build out our brands such that more people have more things to pay attention to and more clients have more ways to reach more consumers? If you look at the world that way, then it's all blue sky. If you look at the world in terms of traditional radio advertising dollars issued by agencies that buy in terms of lowest cost per point, then things look a little darker.
So do you see the future for radio brands in the US, as people increasingly do in Europe, as being multi-platform? You've got to be where your consumers are.
Well, clearly you've got to be where consumers are. And beyond that, you have to be where consumers' interests are. I think that's the key thing. The key thing is that, historically speaking, again, I'll focus my comments to the U.S., which is what I know best. Historically speaking, radio has owned the dashboard. Radio has owned the mobile experience. If you go back far enough, you could have your CDs, you could have your cassette tapes, and then you had your radio. And if you wanted dynamic content, unless you were going to truck around a load of tangible media with you, that dynamic content had to come from radio. And when you listened to the radio, you were getting it in the form that it was delivered to you by quote-unquote experts, authorities. Now, people can create their own experiences. People can do it across platforms. People can share them with each other. I mean, you know as well as I do that the opportunities to do all that are virtually infinite. And attention will follow possibility. So if broadcasters do not follow that attention with possibility of their own and leverage the relationships for as long as they have them, that attention will waver.
Okay, now here's the thing about online radio. Are we ever going to be able to make it pay? You know, you did a podcast yourself the other day with a guy in the United States who has left radio and set himself up as a podcaster and genuinely has discovered a revenue stream. Do you think that there's a future for broadcasting, podcasting, whatever we're going to call it?
What people need to acknowledge is that the model, the business model, has to adapt to the change in media. Let me give you a for instance. This week, I had a meeting with one of my clients. This is a client who has a show they've created, an audio show they've created online. It does not exist on the radio per se. It exists only online. It is specific to physicians who specialize in diabetes. It is hosted by an authority in diabetes, and it is directed towards those physicians. The advertisers for that program are big pharma, pharmaceutical companies. The problem that you described don't exist for this particular company because they have advertisers matched to the audience, matched to the content. They can exist at lower volume levels because they're not about CPM. They're not about cost per thousand. They're about connecting the right consumers with the right content and the right advertisers. Those opportunities exist far and wide, well beyond what we've explored thus far. The example I think you're referring to is there's a fellow in the U.S., Kevin Smith, who created a bunch of movies, Jay and Silent Bob, Strike Back, Clerks, and several other movies. This guy has a podcast empire, and all he does is create a variety of podcasts, and hundreds of thousands of people download these things on a monthly basis, and he monetizes them in a number of ways. He monetizes them on what Gary Vaynerchuk would call the second level, namely, the podcast creates attention for events and monetizable experiences that he has that make money themselves. So, for example, he records his podcast in a live venue in L.A. Well, it costs money to get into that live venue, and that live venue is full of people. That's monetization. That's not traditional monetization. That's not money coming from an ad agency on a lowest cost per point basis, but it's real monetization. Here's another example. You're going to be talking to Clive Dickens. Clive Dickens has done this in the UK quite effectively, from what I understand, by registering people for the audio content that Absolute Radio creates. That registration creates additional value for advertisers. That registration comes in response to additional value to consumers in the form of fewer adverts, higher audio quality, and some other things. So it's a virtuous cycle. It works all the way around. More value for consumers, more value for advertisers, more variety for the makers of brands. The key thing is we got to get out of this mode of, I am a radio station. This is my content. I'm going to put it online and I'm going to expect to monetize it, the very same content, the very same way. That's crazy. There's no reason why we should expect that to work.
Tell me about this conference that you're holding in San Diego soon called HiVio.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. It's kind of an unconference. I'm thinking about it as less a conference and more of a, as I'm terming it, a radio ideas festival. Really the first ever Radio Ideas Festival. It's an invitation-only event at a really weird location in downtown San Diego, essentially a coffee house slash warehouse that can fit maximum 50 people. But my intention is to have 50 people who really want to be there, and then have a bunch of conversations, Q&A, and presentations with some folks who are not strictly in radio, but are just outside of it, or in some cases, far outside of it. I've got people like Tim Westgren, the founder of Pandora. He's probably the closest person to radio participating. I've got the fellow who is the president and COO of the San Diego Union Tribune, which is the area's largest local media company. I've got the head of a digital agency. I've got the brand manager of San Diego Zoo, which is a world-class, one of the finest zoos in the world, and I want to ask him what it takes to get people interested in something they've already seen. I mean, those kinds of answers are really relevant for broadcasters. I've got Google coming to present some stuff. So it's going to be a really interesting day for ideas in and around the radio space, where my intention really is to get people to think more openly about their brands and stop thinking about their brands as strictly distribution channels for content and start thinking about their brands as brands, things that can be built and leveraged and transformed and disrupted. Because if we don't do it, somebody else will. The event, in case anybody wants to sign up for more information, is HIVIO.com, HIVIO.com.
Thank you, Mark. We'll doubtless come back to you on another occasion and talk more about radio in the US. Mark Ramsey on the Radio Today program.
The Radio Today program with Audioboo.
In these days of interactivity with the World Wide Web, make it easy for your listeners to share their voices with you via Audioboo. They simply download the app to their mobile device, record a boo, and send to your station. It's that simple. And just to prove a point, this ad was recorded as a boo and sent in from the corner shop. Audioboo, sharing voices with the world.
For the second part of this episode, we're at Absolute Radio, or should I say Absolute Radios, to talk to the soon-to-be ex-COO, Clive Dickins. Clive, thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming.
Always a pleasure to see you. You recently appeared in the excellent Radio Academy podcast, talking to Lisa Kerr, and that's still online. So I don't want to cover the same terrain. I do want to ask you to compare, though, the industry you're leaving in the UK with the industry that you're going to join in Australia. You're going to be Director of Digital and Innovation at Southern Cross Austereo. So tell us, first of all, what is Southern Cross Austereo? And then perhaps put them in the context of the shape and the scale of the Australian industry.
Okay, so Southern Cross Austereo is a collection of premium media assets, radio and television, that was brought together in 2011 via the public markets and also the minority shareholder of the Macquarie Bank. And it's a metro radio business, and that's the term used in Australia to cover the five cap cities that you'll be familiar with, whether you've travelled there or heard about them. Regional, the 25% of Australia that most people don't really think about outside of the country, and also a broadcast free-to-air television business as well. It is the home of the sort of world-famous Austereo brands, some of which obviously famous for maybe possibly the wrong reasons in the last 3 to 4 months, of Today FM and Triple M.
Sorry to interrupt, but is it a bit like ITV and Global Radio mixed together?
Not quite. I'd say it would be like it's like Global Radio plus GMG plus UTV television franchise, STV's television franchise, and probably UKRD.
Do you think that that kind of model, before we go back to Australia, is the way we're headed in the UK?
Absolutely. I think that the two most interesting markets where this consolidation is happening in the world are Canada and Australia. And Canada is consolidating through telephony and mobile, with Astral and Rogers and Bell consolidating radio through the billing relationship in the regulated space with content. And it's all about content across all platforms. And in Australia, you've got this consolidation between the two broadcast media of broadcast radio and broadcast television. And the logic there is about bringing the advertising relationship together in the climate where the level of disruption to advertising from the internet means that the advertising businesses, broadcast media advertising businesses, who initially we thought were worlds apart as radio and television companies, actually have a common level of understanding disruption where they should work together, because we're all creating content now that can be visualized and shared across multiple platforms. I think in the UK, there's nothing of that happening commercially, although ironically, we have the most successful company of doing that in the world, but we just don't think about it. It's called the BBC. And all of a sudden, but commercial radio is commercial television from 4 to 5 to ITV and some digital channels, and commercial radio from Global to Bauer to Absolute Radio and GMG, etc., UTV, with the exception of the UTV regional television piece, has been worlds apart. But I genuinely believe that is the future.
We've seen BT getting into television.
Yeah, there's the billing. There's the billing relationship.
Yeah, that's the start of that.
That's the first
journey, is it?
Mm-hmm, absolutely, and we'll see a lot more. And it tends to happen in smaller markets first, because the regulatory climate for regulated businesses in smaller countries is obviously closer to government. So there was a lot of Australian businesses, immediate Australian owned still, and a lot of Canadian businesses, Canadian owned still. So people tend to be, the regulatory environment tends to be comfortable with domestic investment coming together, whereas foreign or international investment is often feared by smaller countries, whereas the political climate tends to be a little bit more comfortable with the local business because there's a person there who can, you know, well, it's Australian, so it's an Australian solution rather than a, you know, and here we are very open to any forms of investment, but we've not been quite so open to looking at changing the business model, radios, radio, television, television.
Well, here's the thing, though. I can see how all this makes great sense from a corporate finance point of view, but the history of consolidation within the radio industry in the UK is not the history of providing more choice to the listener, is it? You know, is the listener going to benefit from these kind of partnerships that you're talking about?
Well, I think the big difference in the UK market, which has meant that there has been less listener benefit through consolidation, is that you have this incredible influence of the BBC over free-to-air media. So you take the Australian example. So in the UK, commercial radio roughly takes about 45% of all listening. And in fact, outside of London, it falls to 40%. In Australia, commercial radio takes 85% of listening. Public radio plays in the other 15% in the sector that is basically hard to build a business out of. News, talk, drama, documentaries, alternative music, ethnicity, diversity. And that's what the two public radio systems, there's two in Australia, invest in. The complete role reversal that commercial radio in Australia commenced in the 20s, 2 years before the BBC had Royal Charter, and public radio commenced in the 60s and 70s, almost mirror image of what happened here with commercial radio. So that factor of only having 40 to 45% of listening, and the other factor, which is economically, commercial radio in the metro markets in Australia can rise to about 8 to 9% of all advertising spent on radio, whereas here, you know, we're sort of 3 to 4% if you include the whole advertising base. So you've got these two big factors. You've got a consumption issue where over half of the consumption is to commercial free radio and with the public intervention. And that's not an anti-BBC comment. That's just where we are. And you've got the level of disruption of the digital economy, meaning that commercial radio's share of advertising revenues. Now, and that's not an excuse, but that does give a backdrop of why it's been harder to drive consumer value out of consolidation, because the consolidation has been so much about the sharing of the back office and creating the return for shareholders because of the fact we're working with a smaller industry and a third of advertising. So put that into perspective, commercial radio Australia turns over significantly more money in pounds, not per capita, in pounds, than commercial radio UK, with a third of the population. That was one of my startling things that I first realized when I was considering taking the role. The second thing that was quite startling was when I ranked all commercial radio companies in the world in G20 economies with a turnover over $100 million, based on a couple of data points from Googling or estimates. You know, some of them are private, so you know, plus and minus. Southern Cross Austereo is the world's largest radio company by revenue outside of America in a country that's a third of the population. And then actually when I was in the business last week, I realized actually the company has more actual turnover than the whole of UK commercial radio, the actual company I'm joining. And when you're working with those factors of economics, and that's driven by the consumption, the 85 and the share of advertising, you have a very, very content-rich company then, because you can still make shareholder returns, you can still achieve margins, and you can still empower the consumer. And again, I'm not going to make too many excuses for my commercial radio colleagues, of which I can remain one of, but I do think the macroeconomic environment of the BBC, the 45% listening, the 3% advertising, and the fact that the digital economy here has been so disruptive does make it harder for commercial radio to make an increasingly compelling consumer offering.
Is part of the problem, and I, of course you don't want to be trashing your colleagues here, but is part of the problem that the answer to the financial problems has tended to be we must asset strip, we must take stuff out of our programming because we must save costs at all costs, rather than saying we could get better and be more competitive with the BBC if we invested in talent. Because, I mean, here at Absolute, you've done that. I mean, you haven't noticeably made an enormous amount of money, but you've been creatively hugely successful.
I think undoubtedly the talent is at the centre of all of our businesses, and everybody could have invested a lot more in that. I actually think it's something different, though. I think that if you look at the amount of spectrum, analog spectrum, that public radio takes in this country, has gifted over the last 60 years, which is, into rough calculations and non-scientific basis, that 70% of analog spectrum in this country is occupied by public radio, and therefore achieves 60% of listening from that spectrum. Spectrum is driven consumption. You know, it's actually more than anything. You know, it's wonderful brands, great talent, great content, great marketing, great successes and some failures. But actually, if Boston Consulting Group were to come in to look at the industry, they would just simply actually go even higher and go, look at the spectrum, look at the distribution. And they have 70%+ of analog spectrum and they get 6% of audience. And there's nothing we can do about that. That was just the way it was licensed. Ironically, there was a one-time opportunity to change that. And it's called digital radio, where commercial radio has been gifted over 75% of digital spectrum and has spent 10 years arguing about what they should put on it, to the extent where the BBC finally realized that their digital stations, after Jenny being very cautious about digital radio, should embrace that. And we have these amazing services like 6 and 4 Extra and 1 Extra and 5 Live Sports Extra. So even in a spectrum world where they are, and just think about it, one BBC national network versus one commercial with bigger coverage and a second one to be licensed that we messed up. We messed up that big time. And we have regional muxes, which BBC have no right of passage on. And we have local muxes where they get one channel on. You know, anyone who's listening to this, this is the game changer. If we can change the consumption from 45% to 65% over the next 10 years, everything changes. The investment model changes. The funding pressure will come on the BBC, because if they no longer achieve any more than 40% of the consumption, they, during their charter renewal, they will have to work with less money, and the role reversal will happen.
So this is a plea from you to your colleagues to say, look, embrace digital, invest in digital, make new programming.
Whilst we've been attracting
people.
In the words of John Lennon, you know, digital radio has been happening when we're busy making plans. You know, look at the consumption of digital radio. Over a 12-month period, pretty much only the growth in radio is to digital. And I don't just mean Absolute 80s, 6 Music, Planet Rock, Jazz FM, 4 Extra. Just start to look at the growth of Capital's audience. It's growing on digital radio. It's not growing on FM. It's declining on FM. All of the growth in radio is only to digital, IP and DAB. And we're still arguing about it. And the consumers are way past arguing. They are buying it. They are listening to it. The ones they listen to longer. And even if people don't believe me at that tipping point yet, just look at the macroeconomics of the amount of spectrum we have, that we have been gifted a completely different, you know, and maybe even the BBC might hear this and go, actually, I didn't think of it that way. Well, why has commercial radio got 70-80% of the digital spectrum? So there's that one really important pillar, because we get that right, we can change the game over the next 10 years.
But I'm still hearing that argument from commercial radio that says, I don't want to change an FM listener who's worth this much, my arms being wide open, into a digital listener who's worth this much. In other words, we're not taking the advertising world with us on this trip.
Personally, with respect, I think that's nonsense. Because that analysis breaks down, because they're talking about a digital radio-only listener versus a hybrid listener. So there's no difference to the value of a Capital listener when they listen on FM, DAB or IP, or any other mixed station. No major network in this country has less than 20% now of its listening digitally. None. Even local stations owned by people who have sat there and tried to destroy digital radio, their own stations have no less than 10 or 12% of their listening in digitally. And I'm talking to you, William Rogers. This is now happened, and there is no differentiation. Now, what there is differentiation on is the premium associated to digital-only brands, which are not as valuable because those brands are not as valuable. And that includes, you know, Jazz FM, Planet Rock, Absolute 80s, and others. But that is about the brands and the consumption and the level of automation that we have to put into those. and who owns them, you know, thrilled that Planet Rock's future is now assured by going into one of Europe's largest and most aggressive radio groups, who are expanding in radio across Europe at the moment with business acquisitions in Slovenia and Slovakia, as well as Poland and Germany, as the UK. That's fantastic news. Finally, I'm thrilled that that same company has put one of the most potent analog brands, Kiss FM, onto that multiplex. Thrilled that Global Radio have launched their brilliant brands of Capital and Heart onto the richest regions in the country, Hearts, Beds, outside London, Hearts, Beds, Bucks, Oxfordshire, Northamptonshire. So it is finally happening. But my goodness, guys, we have spent so many years arguing about this.
So in 5 years' time, and I heard you say to Lisa that you like to do jobs for 5 years. So let's imagine, for the sake of argument, that you go to Australia and you're back in 5 years' time.
I will be back, yeah.
What kind of UK radio landscape will you find then?
I'm hoping and expecting that there will be two very well-funded, profitable, highly talent-focused, content-focused commercial radio groups challenging the BBC at a national, local and regional level. But I'm also hoping that we can use the other pillar, which we've not invested enough in the last 15 years, which is giving us a disruptive impact. So sitting here and looking at commercial radio's revenues in 2013 as an estimate, and we are still forecasting being behind where we were in 2000. That is just not acceptable. And I know it's the real world, but what are we doing about that? We've talked a lot about the spectrum. The other area is about online and digital and IP. Because although I believe there should be two strong commercial radio broadcast groups, there can be a whole range of consumer-based propositions that are IP-delivered as well.
Just before we go off down that road, so you're saying that we'll probably have something that we might recognise as being Global and Bauer in 5 years' time. What's going to happen to Absolute?
Well, no, I think I wouldn't even make a forecast of who the companies were. I think, you know, I think there's no guarantee that any of the existing operators will still be operating businesses in 5 years. But there will be two large groups that control the commercial radio broadcast market and therefore operate multiple brands. And that I think in a macroeconomic way, that is the only way for the commercial radio broadcast industry to thrive and survive. In a regulated, output-regulated sense with broadcast licenses and local MPs thinking very clearly about local news and all of the things that comes with that, then there needs to be that consolidation. And whether those brands are TalkSport, whether those brands are Jazz, Planet Rock, Absolute Radio, NME, Heart, Capital, Kiss or Magic, all of those brands will come under the ownership of two strong groups. But the area for opportunity and talent development and innovation then becomes the online internet radio market.
Here's an idea. When you were at Capital, you were trying to persuade the board at the time to buy Austereo.
Yeah.
How about Southern Cross Austereo comes in and buys one of the big groups in the UK?
Well, you know, it's funny you were talking about that. I mean, I remember very clearly where I was on the day when Donna and I had spent a lot of time trying to convince the board that the merger of Capital Radio PLC and Austereo would have created, you know, one of the most powerful content companies in the world. And both of us were really disappointed, to be honest, to put it under mildly, that the board at Capital actually, after 12 months of work, decided that it was too much money and too far away, I think was the quote we got. But anyway, it's the irony now, sort of 12 years later, that I'm going to be working to them. Now, from my new company's perspective, to be honest, Trevor, the shareholders in Southern Cross Austereo and the senior management team are very focused on two key objectives in Australia. One is to, as a position of strength that they have in broadcast media, to try and make investments in online that can grow shareholder value domestically. And one of the reasons why I want to join them in that is because there is a company who actually wants to take, you know, what we've achieved with Absolute Radio as only 5% of the market and overlay it in a business that's 50% of the market. And simply put, you know, that was quite a compelling pitch to me. And the other thing that interests me is the growth is in the Asia-Pacific region for that shareholders and those companies. It's the fastest-growing region in the world. There is little, no interest in growing outside of that region. It's not about a Europe pro or anti-European thing. It just makes much more sense for that company, that management team, those shareholders to focus on that region. So I wouldn't expect what you mentioned there to happen anytime soon.
How is the sale of Absolute going, Clive?
I read the inaccurate Guardian every week to find out, Tara.
So you're not going to talk about that, are you?
I just asked John Plunkett. He seems to know.
I didn't think he would. Talk to me about ear time. Is this the same as share of ear, as Tim Davie used to talk about it?
Pretty much. I think that the radio industry has only really had one competitor in this space for 60 years, since recorded media became accessible to the masses. And that's been the music industry. What do you listen to? You listen to recorded music at home, or you listen to a broadcast radio. Now, the irony now is that all of a sudden everybody is realizing that this is the medium that you consume whilst doing something else, and that doing something else could be online, could be driving, could be washing, could be eating, could be working out. And all of a sudden the radio has a whole bunch of competitors who are coming in to grab a share of ear or ear time. And on one hand, I'm excited about that, because all of a sudden everything we know about how audio connects with the brain and paints theatre of the mind, and also allows you to go and do something else while you do it, which is why we've invested large chunks of our careers in it, is actually, we've got this verification now from everybody that actually this is a really big space, whether it's Facebook launching audio messages, whether it's audio-based ads in your timeline. But the challenge, of course, is, are we match fit, to steal one of Tim's phrases, for this whole new bunch of competitors, where the barrier to entry is no longer technology, spectrum, broadcast licenses, regulation, studios in Soho, but there's just great talent, great people using IP to distribute. And, that's for all the excitement about the verification of this category, there's a whole level of anxiety that we should have about the barriers to entry for others being much lower than we've ever seen before in our lifetime.
Clive, we could talk forever, and I'm really grateful to you for giving up all this time. We're going to do the old what have you been listening to, but not before we've had the latest radio news from Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
Thank you, Trevor. The big stories this week: the PR machine at Star Radio Northeast is working well, as one of its daytime presenters leaves under a big cloud of smoke, and a former Real Radio presenter joins. We'll have that on the website very soon. NME Radio has closed. It was just another Monday morning for most of us, but at midday, owners Town and Country Broadcasting pulled the plug. Town and Country told me it wasn't part of its core media business and is instead concentrating on Nation Radio, which goes on DAB in the north of Wales in the next couple of weeks. It's currently testing. Bauer Digital Radio is looking for services to join its multiplexes in various places around the UK, including Edinburgh, Preston, Humberside and Northern Ireland. If you're interested in operating your own station on DAB, contact bauer.dab at bauermedia.co.uk for all the details. A long-serving member and director of Radio Tyneside has been honoured at the Hospital Radio Awards. Dave Nicholson was presented with the special award by John Myers for reaching 40 years of continuous voluntary service. He told me it was a bit of a surprise.
Completely and utterly gobsmacked and feeling a little bit humbled afterwards. Delighted, obviously. 40 years has been a long time, helped along by a good team of people working with me at Radio Tyneside over the 40 years. It's something I'll not forget I'll never forget it, let's put it that way.
Planet Rock has moved into Mappin House just weeks after the station was bought by Bauer. The Rockers are now at home with the kids at Kiss and the veterans at Magic. And finally, Real Radio XS breakfast presenter Mike Sweeney, talking of veterans, fresh from his one-off show at Christmas time on 5 Live, has landed another national radio show, this time weekly, on Smooth 70s. He's doing Sweeney's Million Sellers every Sunday night at 7, and he's loving it.
I used to have a programme on Capital Radio called Sweeney's 60s Classics, and it was a formatted programme, and I've done that with Sweeney's Million Sellers. It's not just a list of songs, it's songs that were in particular positions on the charts, that have got information about them and statistics and stuff. It is a little bit anoraki, but I think when it comes to music, we're all a little bit anoraki.
That's your lot for this week. Don't forget to keep up to date at radiotoday.co.uk with RCS to find out what's happening in this ever-changing world of radio. Back to you, Trevor.
Thank you, Roy, editor of Radio Today. Clive Dickens, what have you been listening to? I'm going to guess that it's something on Radio 4, because actually that's your station of choice, isn't it?
I haven't been listening to as much Radio 4 recently. I've been listening to a lot of CHR because my new employer makes a significant amount of its value out of CHR. And, of course, I've been immersed in a sort of sport, rock and comedy world for 5 years, and you know, I wanted to get back into the CHR market, so I've been a lot of contemporary radio.
Have you become a Belieber?
No, definitely not. I think the interesting thing is the difference, and it's another completely another topic for Radio Today, but the difference between CHR in other radio markets to here, where CHR in commercial radio here is very, very pop-driven, whereas CHR in other countries is hit-driven. So that's an interesting debate for another day. And then the other one is I've been listening to a lot of Radio 2. I think the way that Bob and the team have continued to craft that schedule, you know, with, not just because of the growth that seeing at breakfast, but I mean, right across the way that Sundays has evolved and the Saturdays involved and the amazing work that TBI Media did with the Beatles staying on BBC Four and seeing how showing how Radio 2 and BBC Four and TBI Media showing how you can make content that lives across broadcast television and radio, which is what, you know, my business now, we've got broadcast television business and thinking that's really exciting. You know, even though BBC have not done a lot of that stuff. So I think, you know, they've been my sort of two pillars of choice for the last couple of weeks.
Have a good time in Australia.
Thank you.
I hope your share of ear and your share of eye go well. Thank you, Clive Dickens. Thank you also to Mark Ramsey. This has been a TDC production by Jamie Taylor, and we'll have another Radio Today programme next week.
The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.